This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 103 of the Bugle audio newspaper for a visual world for the week beginning Monday, the 8th of February 2010, with me, Andy Zaltzman, in London, the city that burnt down in 1666 but is fine again now, thanks. And back from Hawaii, and no longer, therefore, in his heatproof magma retardant pyjamas, now that he is out of volcano range in New York City, the self-styled Billie Jean King of satire, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. I am back from paradise, Andy, back into the cold, friendly streets of New York. And I have to say, I was so tired during last week's Bugle that I have no real memory of actually doing it. I certainly can't remember anything I said. So if I sounded completely delirious and nonsensical, that is why. Now, I did bring back the message which I got from the front desk just before you called my room, and I've got it here. Now, this is up there with my favourite notes, Andy, partly because it came taped to a tube of salt, so it was already intriguing, and partly as it contains a real Bobby Dazzler of a word in it. See if you can spot it. The note read, "Dear John, please be so kind and deliver this salt to Andy and the people of London in their time of great need. I know of no greater crisis at this time in the Western Hemisphere as the snow in the UK. I hope you're enjoying your time in Hawaii as you cover the RNC boondoggle." Did you spot the word yet? "If you have time, give me a call. I'd love to come by and say hello. Cheers, Jeff Tritot, a fellow bugler." Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm afraid we filmed the whole time, so I didn't get a chance to say hello. But thank you on behalf of me for the note, and on behalf of the people of Britain for the salt. You need to start erecting a statue of Jeff over there now, Andy, so that you're ready. You're ready for when his salt starts saving lives.
I will build a statue of him out of salt, and as long as it doesn't rain, he shall stand.
It's a decent compromise.
Boondoggle, incidentally, was the result of an Australian scientific experiment to mate a dog with the former Australian cricketer David Boone back in the mid-1990s. This is Bugle 103, and of course, as Psalm 103 said in the Bible, we are dust. As for man, his days are like grass, like a flower of the field, so does he sprout, for a wind passes over him,
yes,
and he is no longer there, and his,
yes,
place no longer recognises him. In other words, roughly, yeah, translated, we'll all be dead soon. Shit, this is pointless. You might as well switch off now, bury yourself in your duvet, and cry yourself to death. Thanks, God. Nice to know life's worth living.
That's a beautiful theological interpretation, Andy. We'll be dead soon. Shee.
That is basically the most accurate six-word summation of the Bible. 103, incidentally, also the number of cucumbers, which, if eaten consecutively, can make you hallucinate that you're a submarine. And the first guess by ex-US Vice President Dan Quayle in response to the question, how many popes does it take to change a light bulb? The correct answer, of course, is two, one to change the bulb, and one to bang on about condoms. And this is the week beginning the 8th of February. We're recording, therefore, on the Friday the 5th of February, which means that it is 52 years, John, to the day since America lost a nuclear bomb.
What?
In the sea off Tybee Island off the coast of Georgia. It lost a nuke. Now, the official line is it was jettisoned from a struggling plane into the sea and now lies completely harmlessly. Honestly, it's fine at the bottom of the sea. Recent research, however, suggests it might have fallen out of someone's pocket when they went swimming. And that's always the way, isn't it, John? You leave your keys wrapped up in your towel, your wallet in your shoes. But you don't want to leave your nuke on the beach in case someone nicks it. So you pop it in your pocket and you think, well, I'm only swimming backstroke, so it'll be fine. And then, of course, someone starts a game of water rugby or something and you forget about the £7,600 bomb in your pocket. And all of a sudden, plop, it's gone. What it does mean, John, is that there are crabs in the mud off the Georgia coast who now have a more advanced nuclear weapons program than Iran. So keep eating them, seafood fans, until they're no longer a threat. So I've got a few anniversaries. Here's one for Tom. You know how Scots are traditionally quite hot-tempered,
yeah,
and quick to anger.
Well,
there's a reason for that. It all started 423 years ago on Monday, 8th of February, 1587. Mary, Queen of Scots, completely lost her head because of something the English did. And that's, the English chopped her head off. So she did literally completely lose her head, setting a precedent that continues to this very day.
She would have been a very good Scottish sports person, do you reckon?
Yeah.
Waiting for the first Andy Murray jibe.
Well, yeah, he did turn a bit Scottish in that final.
There we go.
He's played so Britishly in the all the way through. All of a sudden, he has to dig out the saltar and play like a Scotsman in the final.
He goes back to America in a Scots handy.
And the 5th of February 1885, this is an incredible anniversary, John. Classic tale of 19th century imperialism. European superpowers got together over a few months, and on the 5th of February 1885, having haggled a bit, gave themselves nice bits of Africa as a present, including almost 2.5 million square kilometres of Africa as a personal possession to King Leopold II of Belgium.
That guy was an arsehole.
This was the modern-day Democratic Republic of Congo. Wasn't given to Belgium, wasn't even given to a holding organisation of some kind. It was given to Leopold II himself. Now, you or I might want to own a book or a pencil, or if times are really good, a tennis racket. Leopold picked himself up 900,000 square miles of African real estate and the 30 million people who lived on it. Now, European imperialism fans, can you guess how many of these questions have the correct answer? Yes. Had King Leopold ever been to this place?
No.
Had the people of the Congo ever heard of him?
No.
Did he have to establish a constitution to ensure he ran the place properly?
No.
Was there any international supervision?
No.
And finally, and most importantly, did everything work out tickety-boo?
Yes!
Well, not quite. You know, there was a few little glitches along the way. The Belgians hideously abusing the local population, chopping off their limbs to persuade them to cooperate. 10 million people or more dying of disease or murder. The raping of natural resources, the decades of exploitation. Then the standard post-imperial instability, dictatorship and war, which rumbles on today in an ongoing conflict that has killed around about 5 million people, which luckily is far enough away from anywhere important that both we and the modern-day Belgians can basically afford not to give a flying about it.
You can't give a Chinese burn to the hand of fate, Andy.
125 years ago, Leopold pocketed the Congo. Not bad. Not bad for a man who apparently had to ask Queen Victoria and Prince Albert what he had to put in where to make his wife grow a baby, according to no less a source than the internet. Finally, in the bin, a quick section on if you're wanting to participate in the Winter Olympics, the marginal sports your country might be struggling to fill its roster for the Vancouver Games, which starts in a week or so, including wrestle sled. Two men, one bobsled, the one who's still in it at the bottom of the track, is the winner. God biathlon, can you negotiate a 75-mile-an-hour downhill ski course while spitting at targets on the way down? If you can flob accurately at high speed, this could be the sport for you. Skate probate, administer someone's last will and testaments whilst doing a triple salco. And ice polo, eight horses, a very slippery surface. Can you honestly say you wouldn't tune in?
Top story this week, denial isn't just a river in Egypt, it's also an inexplicable position on climate change. Andy, it's said that it's best to avoid the subject of politics and religion at dinner parties, even though it should be perfectly possible to discuss both of those areas unless your dinner guests are arseholes. Well, you can add climate change to that list of taboo subjects now, because it seems that some people, inexplicably, literally, scientifically inexplicably, have a problem with it. And I have to say, Andy, if you were serving dinner at your house to someone who suddenly mentioned that they did not fundamentally believe in climate change, I'd like to think that you would quickly pull the elaborate jelly that you'd made away from their faces, saying, "No, no jelly for you. If I may misquote Destiny's Child, you are too crazy for this jelly." Due to the hysteria around this subject, it is absolutely crucial that scientists don't make any stupid mistakes which could be misconstrued as evidence of a huge global conspiracy to force everyone to have solar panels surgically implanted into their babies' foreheads. Unfortunately, though, mistakes do slip through. The East Anglia emails alone last year were enough to give Glenn Beck a month-long mental boner. And this week, the head of the UN's climate change body, Rajendra Pachauri, found himself at the centre of an entirely man-made storm when it emerged that a 2007 report he was overseeing falsely claimed that the Himalayan glaciers would melt by 2035. In response to the criticism, he's decided to neither resign nor indeed even apologise, saying, "You can't expect me to be personally responsible for every word in a 3,000-page report." That's partly true. But you can expect him to have read it and maybe fact-checked it. And the fact is, someone ballsed up here. It's nothing sinister. It's just someone ballsing something up. But something got ballsed, and he really is responsible for that.
It's a bit like Jesus at the feeding of the 5,000 for me, John. You know, if he'd run
I'm interested to hear the explanation of that.
Well, if he'd run out of fish finger sandwiches after feeding only 4,993 of those 5,000... Some people and some in the media would have said, bloody Jesus, starving seven people to the brink of death. And that's the way it is with climate change.
Carey also rebutted newspaper claims that he lives a lavish lifestyle and wears $1,000 suits. He said, that's ridiculous and it's a bunch of lies. There's a tailor who stitches all my suits for 2,200 rupees, which is about £30. Now, first, I don't think there are many, if any, scientists on Earth who you could reasonably claim lead a lavish lifestyle. You don't see many people pulling up in Lamborghinis to labs. Secondly, who is his tailor? Who is this shadowy individual who can knock up suits that look like they cost $1,000 for £30? I demand to know his contact details, Andy. Release the files, Bakari. What are you hiding? This is a huge sartorial conspiracy going on here.
You know, the other side of the coin, John, is that these glaciers aren't going to melt by 2035. I mean, they are still melting, just not by then. Yeah. Maybe not fully for a couple of hundred years. As I said earlier in this, we are dust, John. So, you know, we'll all be dead by then.
Oh, it's good. That's going to be a theme we return to.
Why should we have to regulate our behaviour just so people we're never even going to meet can have some bits of glacier to look at when they go white water rafting in the Himalayas? In terms of the proportion of evidence discredited by these scandals in the climate change farrago, it's roughly equivalent to if Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing had reached the top of Mount Everest, found a snowman and said, oh, bollocks, it's not a mountain after all. It's a snowman in a 25,000-foot-long dress. What a waste of time. And it's also reminiscent of when Newton discovered gravity, John. There were, as always with science, there were still sceptics and conspiracists and deniers, and the conspiracists said, yeah, well, this is just the rug trade behind this. The more gravity pulls us down, the more wear and tear our floors get. Very convenient. And the denier said, no, it's all bullshit. I saw a condor this morning. Did it fall to the ground like Newton said it should? No, of course it didn't. It just floated around in the sky. There's no gravity. If there was gravity, how could you explain why I'm stuck to my ceiling? You're not. You've crucified yourself on two of those wooden beams. What of it? Besides, have you seen Michael Jordan's hang time? Gravity, schmavity.
Just reading up about these stories opens up a Pandora's box of whack jobs. The comments pages below these articles and various message boards devoted to climate change passes you through a wardrobe into a Narnia of nutcases. And I do think that message boards might well be the perfect time capsule of crazy. If any life form, thousands of years down the line, comes to this scorched, lifeless planet and wonders what happened, I do hope that there's a hard drive intact somewhere so they can read what we were saying to each other before we died out. That would be such a valuable window into the fatal flaws that helped wipe humanity from the face of the planet. It'd be like reading messages that dinosaurs were sending to each other moments before the asteroid hit. Stegosaurus 21 does not know what he's talking about. How can you be so blind to the possibility that an asteroid could trigger tidal waves and volcano eruptions which could eliminate us as a species? Tyranno King needs to shut the f*** up! Wake up, people! The big bipedal carnivores are just trying to get you to buy into their asteroid exploratory research project. Can't believe people get duped by this. Diplodoofus can suck on my horn! This discussion sucks! Hold on, what's that dark thing in the sky that's getting bigger?
If it is a conspiracy, the whole of global warming. For a start, whose conspiracy is it? There seems to be conflicting arguments, whether it's a left-wing conspiracy or a right-wing conspiracy, whether it's to boost the Western economy or to break the control of the West over the world economy, whether it's pro-nuclear or pro-alternative energies, or if it's just some scientists wanting to keep their jobs. Because without climate change, they'd all have to get a proper job, like journalism or prostitution. There are a few scientists who are sceptics about global warming, but a poll in America in 2009 by the Pew Research Center found that 84% of scientists say the Earth is getting warmer because of human activity. But just 49% of the public agreed with that. But the more interesting part of this survey, John, was that 76% of the scientists polled thought that it was a major problem that news does not distinguish between well-founded findings and bullshit.
Yes.
And this is the problem.
Yes. Absolutely. Like,
all you need, you don't even really need a lab coat now. If you just go out and say, no, global warming isn't happening, then you get on telly. And the majority of sceptics are, shall we say, not scientists, but more, you know, the kind of people who would have told Mozart how to play the piano. It's not a debate. It is, as you say, just people shouting into a void. It's like an argument about how to play golf between Jack Nicklaus and a wildebeest. Reading message boards on this and most other subjects is like staring into a bottomless abyss of infinite human fury and rampaging paranoia, masking his personal conviction. And this is an example from the pages of our sister website, Times Online. So these people do have access to the Bugle by being alive and having the internet. But anyway, one guy wrote, I'm gratified that the UK press has taken on the task of showing these pseudoscientists for what they are, internationalist con artists and charlatans with a leftist political agenda aimed at regulating what we drive, what we eat, where we live, and how many of us there can be. This has never been about climate. It's about increasing the power and control of a political elite over every aspect of our lives. Individual liberty be hanged.
Be hanged.
Now, calm down, you little pumpkin head, and put your telly on, wait for the advertisements, then see exactly who's trying to regulate what you drive, what you eat, and where you live. Another comment on the message boards asks this question. How many more lies and deceptions do we have to put up with before this whole idea of anthropogenic global warming can be put to rest? Well, I can answer that one for you. Lots. There need to be lots, lots more lies and deceptions. Aristotle, John, the erstwhile number one ranked philosopher on the 4th century BC European philosophy circuit, the self-styled Federer of philosophy, if you will, used to bang on and on about the middle way, the golden mean, the path of sanity and rightness between the extremes of frothing, spittling, honk-town crazy excesses. And what would he make, John, of the internet message boards? Of the military-level concentration of smuggery, twattishness, and self-aggrandisement. Now listen up, message boarders. Leave that to us comedians. We are the self-aggrandising smug twats in this town. You're not welcome. Get off our patch. Of course, global warming, not the only conspiracy currently duping the world. These other ones there are as well. The World Health Organization, set up as a conspiracy by pensions companies to raise life expectancy around the world so they can fleece more people than ever with their pensions. Oxfam, the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief, as it was originally founded. Or was it the Food Industry Committee for Record Profits? Because what do people need if they don't want to starve to death? Food, John. And if they've avoided starving to death and want to continue avoiding it, they're going to need more food.
You just blew my mind.
It all falls into place now. And puppies as well. A conspiracy to distract humanity from more important business by being awfully sweet. You know, imagine how much more we could have achieved as a species if we didn't spend so many billions of man-hours every year going, at little puppies. And if you don't believe me, ask yourself this. Did Shakespeare have a puppy? No. Did Hitler? Yes. I don't know if that made any sense, but the point stands.
Gay people news now. They're here. They're relentlessly discriminated against. They're depressingly used to it. Andy, if you are looking for the perfect ironic juxtaposition of a rampantly homophobic individual with a suspiciously flamboyant dress sense, you go Pope every time. Pope Benedict XVI, or Benny 16 for those who like to follow him on Twitter. Apparently he was extremely pissed off that 15 Bennies got there before him. Pope Benny marked the announcement of his first papal visit to the UK with a major attack on the British government's equality legislation. That's right. He was attacking equality legislation. Not lack of equality legislation. Not that. Don't make that mistake. It was the equality legislation that got his golden cone head all steamed up.
The thing is, this legislation was proposed by Harriet Harman, John, who is so roundly disliked by large swathes of the British public that a lot of people have just assumed that the Pope is absolutely right on this. By mere virtue of being opposed to Harman.
He claims that the legislation threatens religious freedom and, I quote, natural law. What the f*** is natural law? What exactly does he mean by that? Because I think I've got suspicions and none of them are good. Because his and the church's concept of natural law seems to include an overt tolerance for institutional child abuse. I don't want to keep throwing those isolated thousands of incidents in his face, Andy, but he keeps making it very hard not to. He urged British priests and archbishops to invoke missionary zeal to resist these laws. And wow. If I've learnt one thing, Andy, from my patchy knowledge of history, it's that nothing good happens whenever missionary zeal is invoked. No one invokes missionary zeal before settling down to cook a lovely omelette. Or conjures up missionary zeal before going online to sponsor a penguin. It really is usually stirred up shortly before damning people to hell.
I don't know, I get pretty passionate about my carbonara, John.
Well, you know, you make a nice carbonara, Andy.
Of course, a lot of people have said that this legislation will force the Catholic Church to employ practicing gays and transsexuals. And I guess the response to that is, it won't. But let's all pretend that it will, because it makes for a more entertaining squabble.
Exactly. The recent legislation supposedly prevents Catholic adoption agencies from discriminating against gay couples, and the proposed equality bill would make it much harder for churches to exclude job applications from homosexuals or, as you say, people who've changed their gender. So you can see why he's so furious about this, Andy, because these laws give gay people the option to have jobs and families, and we all know they can't be trusted with either of those. They can be trusted with game show hosting and rollerblades, and that's pretty much all we've agreed on so far.
They've already got gold lame. Why do they need anything more? But the Pope, in fact, issued a statement, because it is, of course, a slippery slope if this kind of legislation gets passed until people are legally obliged to marry people of the same sex, regardless of whether or not they want to. And the Pope issued a statement in Latin, in which he again stated, Deus Adamum Evemque, non Adamum Stevemque, fake it. Which, of course, translated means God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So, it's there in Latin, John. You can't argue with Latin.
The Pope's full quote at his conference was, the effect of some of the legislation designed to achieve this goal of equality, not like the tone of his voice there, has been to impose unjust limitations on the freedom of religious communities to act in accordance with their beliefs. In some respects, it actually violates the natural law, there it is, upon which the equality of all human beings is grounded and by which it is guaranteed. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Holiness. Was I intruding on you wanting to discriminate against people? I am dreadfully sorry. How rude of me. Please accept my entirely sarcastic apology.
He also said that staying true to the gospel, quote, in no way restricts the freedom of others, but rather serves their freedom by offering them the truth.
Ugh.
One way of looking at that particular omelette. But I'm not a Catholic, John, and I very much doubt that I ever will be. But I think we should remember this is the same Pope who in December 2008 said that anything beyond regular heterosexual relations was a destruction of God's work. To me, seems to be a slightly odd way of going about destroying God's work. You know, indulging in sexual practices in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, but shame that his predecessor as Pope didn't feel that he could similarly interfere with the march of Nazi Germany in the war. But, you know. Live and learn.
The Pope's visit to England will be a state visit, meaning it will be paid for by the British taxpayer at a cost of reportedly up to £20 million in the middle of a huge recession. Could, Andy, the wealthiest religion in the world, not pick up the tab on this trip? It is hard to have someone push the bill across the table to you whose house is made of gold. The Archbishop of Westminster defended this position, the Reverend Vincent Nichols. He said, we do not support the notion of discrimination, but you have to distinguish between people. That is not successfully rejecting accusations of bigotry. That is just getting a thesaurus off a shelf. We do not support discrimination. We support favouritism. We like bias. It's very different. Most of the letters are not remotely the same. Carlos the Jackal news now. First off, Andy, I know we agree on this. Phenomenal name for a criminal. Let's just get that straight out of the way so it's said. Put what he did to one side for a second. It is independently a phenomenal name.
Do you know why he got that name?
No.
Because you'd think it's maybe because of a brutal similarity to a scavenging, omnivorous wild dog who is totally merciless in what he brings destruction to. But that's not true. In fact, it was because someone found a copy of Frederick Forsyth's novel The Day of the Jackal in his possessions.
What?
That
really?
It's true, yeah.
That's it.
But it is lucky, in hindsight, they didn't find him reading Beatrix Potter's classic kids' book Miss Tiggy Winkle. Or in Carlos the Tiggy Winkle. I doubt he'd have got anywhere.
Doesn't inspire fear.
Or even found a copy of the autobiography of New York Yankees pitcher Cheng Ming Wang. Or even Thomas Hardy's little-known early novella, The Flying Penis.
I personally would have love to have been John the Jackal. You know, I had the alliteration going for me too, but fair play to him. Carlos got in there first and he made it work for him. Illich Ramirez Sanchez, also known as Carlos the Jackal, was once described as the most dangerous man alive, and he's now suing a French TV company saying his biographical image could be violated. Wow. That is going to be a tricky case for his prosecution lawyer to make, Andy, because the defence already have their case ready to go. The company's lawyer, Richard Malka, said this week, how could we tarnish the image of Carlos when he himself has claimed to be behind almost 2,000 deaths? And you can see his point.
Yeah, you can see that point. Yep.
The lawyer went on to say, seriously, there is absolutely no way that even I can f*** up this case. In fact, I'm going to do the case drunk. That's how confident I am.
He is, in fact, married to a French lawyer who he marries in prison, which does suggest...
Oh, boy.
In person, he must be unbelievably charming. Because that is a hard pull, isn't it?
It's either that, Andy, or it's wanting to take the surname The Jackal, which, like I said, I am genuinely interested in. The production company is producing a three-part drama about Carlos's life. Maybe he's worried that they're going to concentrate on the jackaling part of his life rather than his lesser-known interest in horticulture, and he's trying to stop that. Apparently, he'd rather not be remembered as a mass murderer and terrorist and instead have people remember him as one of the top 20 topiarists in South America. He was good, Andy. I believe he once trimmed a bush into a spooky likeness of Wayne Gretzky mid-slapshot.
Bugle feature section now. Needless space travel. Well, another country has muscled in on the completely needless space travel market. Iran, John, has launched a rocket carrying a mouse, two turtles and some worms.
That's not a space program. That's the setup to a joke.
Or it is a kid in a primary school biology class who has really misunderstood what he's supposed to be doing. But I guess it's a slippery slope, isn't it? Yeah. You know, we are going to have to invade Iran now. As Tony Blair said, we're going to have to be prepared to invade Iran, as he said in his testimony to the Iraq inquiry last Friday, John, pretty much as we were recording the Bugle. He was saying, yeah, I think Iraq went so well, we might as well have a crack at the next one. Well, clearly hasn't looked at the map. It's massive. We're going to have to invade now, because if Iran can fire a rocket with a mouse, two turtles and some worms into space, then... Yeah, within a couple of months, I'll be firing a nuclear bomb at Israel. It's a slippery slope. So we've got to take action now. Must have been quite odd for the worms, I would imagine. Yeah. Thinking, well, we've been put in a capsule with a mouse and two turtles. Already this looks dodgy. Oh, balls! I'm not built to withstand these Gs.
It's true, Andy. Iran has blasted a turtle into space, and I'm not sure if I'll ever reach the age where I don't find that sentence funny. Also, I find that much more terrifying than their nuclear program. What was that turtle doing up there, Andy? He was watching us. That turtle's definitely up to something. Should we not be worried that Iran now has the turtle? Could they not somehow radicalise those turtles, prompting them to fill themselves with explosives and walk very, very slowly into a Western bar somewhere in Tehran?
We should say also that two can play at that game, Ahmadinejad, because I was inspired and I put a gerbil next door's tortoise and three slugs in a salad. So be warned. But Obama has said that America will not go back to the moon, as promised. The planned moon journey for, it was about 10 years' time they were planning to go, wasn't it? Well, it's off because, well, it would be a total waste of money for a country that spent every cent it's got, or more accurately, every cent it's not got, ladling itself out of a particularly gloopy financho soup. But what does this mean, John? If Iran can fling some small creatures into space, does that make it a superpower? Because it worked for the Soviets, John. One day it was off you go doggy, the next day it was let's take humanity to the precipice of Armageddon. It's not going to end well. Your emails now, and thanks very much for your emails. Fantastic as ever. A couple we'll address next week, including Bin Laden coming out as a massive fan of the environment, which is a bit of a shock. Clearly, his PR advisor has told him that his message of death to the West isn't really hitting home with the public. Also, wondering what's happened to Wall, the marginal sports correspondent, who hasn't featured for a long time on the bazaar, so he'll be back next week.
That's good.
But this came in from Matt Opper, who writes, I've taken the liberty of giving you some street basketball nicknames. So without further ado, dear John O'Block Oliver, Andy Big Z Zaltzman, and Tom the Enigmatic One. Recently, I went home to visit my parents for the weekend, On Sunday, as is traditional, we visited one of the local Catholic church with my aunt and uncle. At the service, there was a children's choir. I was informed by my aunt, who happens to be a teacher at the school, that the choir was intended to serve as the start to Catholic Schools Week. That term was vaguely familiar, calling to mind a week of extraordinarily boring activities, usually wrapped up with a Friday visit from the Bishop of the Diocese and his epic pointy hat for a two-hour-plus mass, which is exactly as much fun as it sounds. The priest who was presiding over the mass couldn't help but notice the regular adult choir had been replaced with an all-children's version. Now, there were many alternatives from which he could choose to acknowledge their presence to the congregation, ranging from the standard, "It's nice to see and hear the middle school choir has joined us this fine morning," to the more colloquial and infinitely more controversial, "Hey, would you give these young punks up here a listen? They sound like the voices of angels this morning." But unfortunately, the presiding priest didn't choose any of the available options and instead chose this gem of a sentence to acknowledge the presence of the 20 or so 11 to 14-year-olds a few yards away. What? He said, "It is not often that I have a large group of children at my feet staring eagerly up at me." At which point, all whispered conversations ceased, and an ear-splitting and ubiquitous silence fell upon the church, broken not even by the priest, who seemed all too aware that he had said something very, very wrong. After 30 seconds, or maybe 30 years as it seemed, the silence was broken when a youngish man from the back of the congregation shouted, "Too soon!" and walked out of the church to the sounds of his own footsteps and the stifled laughter of those with a sense of humour. Best mass ever.
Oh, that's a great email. Oh, very good. We have an email here from Cornelius Storr.
Good name. Is that a real good name?
I don't know. Let's hope so. The subject line, "Is John suicidal?" Oh, boy. "Dear sirs, listening to last week's Bugle, I couldn't help but notice that John sounded a little, let's call it odd, seeing as I'm not sure whether to describe it as relaxed and illuminated, or as deeply disappointed and emotionally dead inside. Being a loyal follower of the Bugle, I worry about John and wanted to know what exactly was the matter, so I've come up with three possible answers to what could have created such an emotional state in a National Youth Theatre veteran of his class." Easy, Cornelius. "Please let me know which might apply. One, his being on the other side of the world than Andy disconnected the emotional link to aforesaid Zoltzman, overwhelming him with both the feeling of freedom and absolute calm, while at the same time leaving a vast emptiness in him and the fear of returning to the other side of the world when the Zoltor would demand back what he had claimed years before." I mean, there was part of that, Cornelius. That was definitely part of it. Two, John's attendance at the Republican conference in Hawaii and the witnessing of the Republicans, simply unbelievable ignorance, stubbornness and backwardness in the face of everything modern thinking is achieved, has first driven him into utter misery and then given way to a translucent state of carelessness and joy, which is actually his mind protecting him from the incomprehensibility of those blithering idiots. You're warm there, Cornelius. Three, John got baked with the cleaning lady. Three was not the case. I tell you, Cornelius, it was mainly two there. Mainly total despair. And mainly the fact that was the equivalent of five in the morning to me. And I'd been awake for the previous, I think, 36 hours. So a combination of that and an emphatic number two.
So thanks again for your emails. Do keep them flooding in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. And next week's best email will win a prize. A really bad prize. Sport now, and the big news in sport this week, of course, was Roger Federer being good at tennis initially, and Andy Murray being Scottish at tennis. But also, John, England here, we are in the midst of national upheaval, the kind of turmoil, socio-political unrest and division that not really seen since the old Roundheads and Cavaliers days, the 17th century Civil War, the Royalists and the Republicans. All over the England football captaincy, John, and whether John Terry, the incumbent England football captain, should still be allowed to be England football captain after strangling with the ex-girlfriend of another England player. John, this is the kind of philosophico-ethicalist debate that is set father against son, brother yes. against brother,
yes.
fan against fan. It has literally ripped this country apart.
I'm sorry, Andy.
It's the biggest issue facing this nation today. It goes to the very heart of what we are, who we are, and why we are. Mm. Probably the most inflammatory issue in Britain since the whole should-we-shouldn't-we slavery debates.
I think my main take on this story is not only that it's sad for the individuals involved, but really more the only question in my head is this going to affect England's performance at the World Cup? Because if not, I'm not interested, and if so, I am excessively interested.
I think you're very much in the same boat as the majority of the English public, who have clearly decided, well, as long as England win the World Cup, then frankly, he could eat 50 orphans a day and we wouldn't mind. There's a possibility that Terry's extracurricularism, if we can call it that, could affect team unity. You know, what if England, John, in the World Cup semi-final, in a penalty shootout, they need to score to stay in the tournament. Up walks Wayne Bridge, the wronged man in this story, and he walks up, he puts the ball on the spot, he turns around, looks at his team lined up, and his captain, John Terry, staring at him, saying, come on, Wayne, do it for the nation.
Yeah.
And just runs up and deliberately spoons it 10 feet over the bar, turns around to Terry, flips in the bird and runs out the stadium crying. Can we risk that?
Oh boy.
I guess it also comes down to the question, does the nation mind that the captain of our most popular sport is, on the evidence available, a bit of a prick?
The evidence was there before this happened. Oh, it's not a new thing.
Yeah, I know other people have asked, does captaincy in football matter? Because all it basically involves, being captain of a football team, is making sure you're the first one to swear at the referee when a decision goes against you.
Yeah.
So really you need maybe someone with a bit more pace off the mark than Terry to do that. But the latest news is that he's been ditched as captain, according to the telly, as we recall. That's happened live in the last 5 minutes on the telly through the screen that I'm not paying much attention to.
So who becomes captain then?
Well, I guess you know, any buglers out there wanting to apply.
Yeah.
If you apply via us, we will forward your application to why you should be England football captain on to the FA.
That's right. So send your emails in. Mark them England football captain captaincy and put the reasons why you think you would make a good captain on there. And we'll send them to Capello.
Well, a quick sporting forecast now as well. Super Bowl on Sunday, this Sunday. So might be yesterday by the time you're listening to this. New Orleans Saints against Indianapolis Colts. Will the Saints breeze through? Or will the Colts be manning the barricades?
Oh, very good, Andy.
Come Monday, who will say drew the short straw? Either way, I patent see it.
It tapered off.
That's my quarterback puns for the Super Bowl.
It should be a great Super Bowl, Andy. You've got one of the funniest quarterbacks in football history in Peyton Manning, also an excellent athlete, against the gunslinging New Orleans Saints. Now, my heart says Saints. My head says Colts. I would like the Saints to win.
Well, is that
who dat? Who dat? Who dat? Who dat think they gonna beat them Saints? Nobody. I'm finished.
Why is Peyton Manning the funniest quarterback? Does he play the game in a funny way?
No, he's a very funny man. He hosts Saturday Night Live very well, and he does some...
He doesn't throw joke balls.
He does legitimately funny commercials. He's a funny man.
He doesn't throw exploding... football, so no, like discipline a ball of flour.
Like the funniest joke of all time, the exploding golf ball.
Yeah. Incidentally, the New Orleans Saints are so cool because their founder, Dave Dixon, once hit his head on a lead pipe, went mad and tried to sign John the Baptist.
Yes, correct.
And the Colts are so cool because of an attacking play they used in their early days in which the players would line up to form the outline of a Colt 45 and then fire their star running back, Salmonitz McGurrigy, straight into the opposition. McGurrigy, of course, famously the first male player to be caught playing in drag in professional women's football.
Yep.
Made his name playing as DeBrenda Hinge for the Detroit Spinsters.
Also true.
Yeah, also had a short stint playing women's basketball for the Portland Progesterones, the New York Knickerelastics, the Boston Brooders, and the St. Louis Maternal Instincts.
All facts.
Fact.
So that's it for the Bugle this week. Happy birthday to my brother on Monday, Mark. Happy birthday, Mark.
Right. Are you sounding like you're turning into a radio DJ there?
No, I'm just saying happy birthday to my brother. It stops saying, I don't take birthday requests. It's just whenever it's my brother's birthday, I'd like to wish him a happy birthday. Right. It'll only happen once a year, Andy.
Okay, you're not...
But it is happening now.
Is this in lieu of sending him a card and a present?
No, they're on their way.
All right. So.
Yeah. You, Andy.
What have you got him?
I'm not going to say, because I don't... Because this technically will come out slightly before Monday, I think. I don't want him to hear it.
Right. Card. Where's my birthday present?
Pretty funny card. Actually, I've got your birthday present. Yeah, it's on my desk.
Is that
at work
last year
and I still
or
haven't
year?
Sent it. We'll call it this year because I want last year's to have been even later. I will definitely get around to putting that in the post, but I don't know if it'll be any time soon.
All right, okay.
Well, it's been there a while. It's a good one. It's good.
Excellent. It's not edible, is it? I hope you didn't buy it last October and have just had it on your desk ever since. Like a little cake.
Well, I mean, you could try and eat it, though.
Bye-bye, buglers.
Bye. Have a lovely week.
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.